This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Great Brazilian team. Count. It's there. They're ahead.
It's one of the biggest sporting events in the world. And today, we're giving you an inside look at the teams and playoff pictures to date.
As we present Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
It's okay now. The goalkeeper's beaten. And South Africa have their first goal.
Listen as Jason Longshore gives you all the latest in the world of soccer.
As we break down the matchups and get you insights you can only find here.
Atlanta Soccer Tonight is on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Here's Jason Longshore.
Let's kick it. Atlanta Soccer Tonight live on 92.9, The Game and the Odyssey app. Thanks for hanging out extra late night with us tonight. I'm Jason Longshore alongside Jessica Charman. And Jess, tournament keeps adding new layers every day. We had some shocking results. We had some trash talk that was responded to today. And we had a heavyweight battle to finish off the day. Two former World Cup champions on the pitch. Feels like we're getting into the business end of this tournament right now, doesn't it?
It does indeed. And it's so exciting that so many of these groups are still so fiercely in contention. It means that those game threes are so pivotal for so many teams. And I love that about this tournament, because in previous years, when you look back, a lot of games have been dead by game three. Teams are rotating. They're not playing the full squad. They're not fighting in the same way that they're going to be when game week three comes along. So I'm excited. Today had some ups, it had some downs. And as you mentioned, some talkers of trash definitely had their comeuppance.
Yeah, we will get into the talkers of trash in the second segment. We're going to start with the heavyweight matchup, Germany and Spain, two former champions on the pitch. Germany wasn't going to be eliminated because of the earlier result in the group, but they needed something out of this. And it was a really even match. It ended at 1-1. It felt even. Both teams had momentum swings. Both teams had opportunities. But you get into the early portion of it. I feel like Spain was the better team early on. Germany found some ways to be disruptive. It looked like Spain was going to get on the board really early. Huge save from Manuel Neuer in a really difficult one from Dani Olmo. I don't know how Neuer really saw it, but he made a big save.
No, and that's the elite goalkeeper, though. The reaction, the speed that you're able to make that dive and cover so much ground in his goal as well. It wasn't one of those reaction saves where you're just sticking out a leg or an arm. He had to make a full reach save to tip it onto the crossbar. It was miraculous. You saw it in the forward's reaction. He had no idea how the goalkeeper made the save, and you love that as a keeper. When you see the forward even almost congratulating you for a save, you know you've reached the elitist level. And I was a little critical of Neuer in goal a couple of times, and I think that he stood out today as a player that made a couple of very high-level saves. And again, it's sometimes adjusting to the speed of play in this tournament and getting used to the level that you're playing at in the world international stage. And I thought he had a very good game to keep them in it.
Yeah, seventh minute, that save off of Dani Olmo. 35 passes in the buildup to that from Spain. Like the prototypical Spanish buildup, that was it. But they don't find the back of the net. No goals in the first half. They had 68% of the ball, Spain did. Germany, though, was starting to maybe chip away at Spain, it felt like, as the half went on. One really interesting aspect from a tactical perspective, and this game was very tactical, chess match, as we say. you had Germany try to take away Sergio Busquets in the buildup. They put players like on top of him, so Spain couldn't get to him first and then pass out. So Spain had to adjust. So Busquets forced some things. Grid players for Germany were forced into mistakes because of the Spanish pressure. It's really interesting. At times, Germany looked like Spain and Spain looked like Germany. It was just all over the place. Second half, Spain brings on Alvaro Morata. There's a lot of talk about Senor Morata, who is offside maybe more often than any other forward you'll ever find, but he scores goals. He doesn't score as many as you might think he should for Spain, but he scored a big one here. It was another great piece of buildup from Spain, this time a little bit shorter than 35 passes. Jordi Alba with the low cross to the near post. And if you go back and you watch Morata's run, he gets inside of the defender. It's not an easy finish, but he makes it look pretty easy, and he gives Spain the lead.
When you watch it back, though, it's like an outside of the boot flick of some sort. Mm-hmm. The intricate and quickness of thought to be able to change the way that you're striking a ball. He hit it in the perfect place. He made such a clean connection with a difficult technique, as we say. I thought it was a wonderful goal. And I honestly thought that Spain was going to take it from there and really run with it. But it showed that the Germans were able to adapt and come back into this one.
The Germans always come back. Always. You always expect it. That's why the game against Japan was such a shock. Morata, sixth time in World Cup history that a substitute has scored in successive games. One player as a substitute has scored in back-to-back games. Germany defensively, and this is going to be an issue as the tournament goes on, if Germany keeps moving on, they haven't had a clean sheet in the calendar year. That's a problem. That's not typical for Germany. But they did start to push forward. They did start to take more chances. I thought Jamal Musiala was just brilliant the whole way through. He ends up having a big hand in creating the goal for such an interesting story. Niklas Füllkrug. Füllkrug was in the second division last year with Werder Bremen. He's played a lot in the second division. This was his fourth cap for Germany. And one of the biggest goals that you're going to find for the German national team in a World Cup, it was the equalizer and got them a point.
Yeah. When you think about it, he was the man that stepped up big. He used that experience sometimes at the lower league levels. I feel there's a little bit more fight, you know, having watched English Championship, having spent a lot of time watching second divisions, you're kind of in those nitty gritty games even more because there's a level of competitiveness, fiercer level. People are fighting for their lives in those divisions. And I think he sort of displayed that on the pitch. And you saw in the celebration running over to the sideline what it meant in that moment to be trusted on the world stage. And as you say, Jason, it's the goal that gave the Germans life, because even if they hadn't been eliminated, let's be completely realistic, if they hadn't picked up a point today, their path was a lot more difficult. And now they're able to take a bit more of control over their destiny.
Yeah, now they have complete control. They win, they're going to be in, I think, just because of the way the matchups fall. But this wasn't done. That's what's crazy about this game is the 90th minute and into stoppage time, you had a bunch of big, big moments in this. Morata in the 18. Schlotterbeck misplayed it initially, kept him onside, then made a lunging tackle that he had to get right or it's a penalty. He got it right. Goretzka with a big tackle on Nico Williams in the 95th. Germany goes the other way off of the play. Leroy Sané looks like he's in. I thought it was a brilliant play from Unai Simón, a goalkeeper that I'm really high on. He came out really aggressively and gave Sané no angle, forced him out wide, ends up giving the ball away.
Yeah, I think with the touches that Sané took, Simón did a fantastic job. Quick off of his line, sharp reaction, shield him out. Should Sané have done something differently earlier? Perhaps there was the option inside. Was it a little selfish? You could say, but he's a player with so much quality that's been able to find opportunities from that angle. He's probably not expecting Simón to come out so quick and smother any angle. We've seen a lot of goals at the near post, right? During this tournament, I feel like we've seen a lot of goals creep in on goalkeepers from those sorts of angles. Perhaps Sané thought another one was going to come his way. Simón had other ideas.
It's funny. I'm giving the goalkeeper all the credit in this one. This is like role reversal here on this show. It's crazy.
Yeah, I've been told I'm too biased. So I gotta step up my game, right?
It goes out for a corner, and then Simón with a really brave catch in traffic. That was the last touch of the game. Ended 1-1. Let's hear from an old friend of Atlanta United fans out there, Kevin Kratz. He's now coaching in the Atlanta United Academy. Kevin and Jose Silva, who is a Spanish coach in the Atlanta United Academy, had a chance to chat with both of them. You can listen to the whole interview on the Off the Woodwork podcast. Kevin joked that if Germany hadn't come back to tie, he was not going to do the interview. Luckily, they did, so we got the interview. This is Kevin's thoughts on Germany in the tournament so far.
I was happy with the first half against Japan. That was a decent start, but then we didn't finish our chances that we had. We had to hit the post, a little bit unlucky too. But then I think protecting your own goal is so important in this World Cup. If you see how many times crosses come in and how people just fly in to protect your own goal, this is something that's very important in the last game. And then, of course, you can bring all your qualities. I think if you look in general, all the teams that are, it's not like you look at the World Cup group stage and you say, okay, these are the 8 teams that we see in the last few rounds. It's not like this anymore. All the little ones, we call them little ones, they are they really have stepped up their game. They've invested money. They invested in structure, in culture. So it's you see it's getting closer and closer every game.
I feel like this group is a prime example of that. With Germany and Spain, heavyweights, you expect them to go through no problems. Germany had a problem with Japan, who is right in that level, right underneath the heavyweights. They've been getting closer and closer and closer. And then Costa Rica stepped up with a big surprise today, and they've made a miracle run in a World Cup before. This group is exactly what Kevin's talking about. The smaller teams are more competitive in this World Cup than I think ever before.
And showing more resilience as well on the field, because I think the biggest thing you look at is with these smaller nations, they have a hard result in game one. You look at Costa Rica losing 7-0. A lot of teams lay down and die at that point. They don't come back in the same way. They're not able to regain because they've realized that they've been blown out the water in a match. And for them to come back is a big testament to that mental strength, the coaching, the players, the fight on them. To me, it's the most exciting part of a World Cup, though, to see that anybody can truly beat anybody. In a lot of World Cups, you're looking at those groups, you're picking them right away. Who's going to get out of the group? And it's a testament to the growth of the game in these smaller nations and the quality of the players they're developing. And the tactical improvement as well, I think, is huge. The tactical improvement, understanding of these coaches on how they're going to unsettle the Goliaths of the soccer world. And that's a huge progression. I don't want to look ahead too far, but adding the extra teams into the World Cup in 4 years' time, I wonder if we're going to lose a little bit of this closeness in games.
I don't think we will, actually. You might the first time, and we saw it in the Women's World Cup when you expanded, but I think the talent pool is deeper on the men's side when you get to those teams that are on the outside looking in right now. If you go to 33 to 48, the teams that aren't going to be there that would be there next time around. The one thing I hope that FIFA does, and there has been talk that they would do this because the format for 2026 is not set in stone yet. There was talk about groups of 3 teams and only 2 group stage games, mm-hmm. and then a lot of teams going to a knockout round. A lot of groups would have 2 teams out of the 3 going to the knockouts. There's been talk that they would go to the traditional 4-team groups. I think 3 games is critical, and we're seeing it in this tournament with the flow of 3 games. You need 3 games at a World Cup. Some teams need it to get going. I want it for the drama that we're going to get in this next week.
Yeah, I completely agree. If you only get 2 games, you barely get the ball rolling. You barely get used to playing. You don't get the chemistry, all of those things. But most importantly, you miss out on so much in terms of the groups might already be dead after the first game, depending on goal differential in that first game. I want to see things go straight to the line. And that's why I'm so excited about our next phase of games.
Yeah, it was an easy, I think, hot take that we started seeing making the rounds after Spain's big win over Costa Rica that, when they add these other teams, you're going to get all kinds of games like this. I don't think that's the case. And I think Costa Rica showed today that, hey, those games do happen from time to time. We're seeing smaller teams play in the traditional way, bunkering, sitting back deep. We're seeing smaller teams play in a more aggressive way, high press. Also, smaller teams saying, we want the ball. You're seeing more tactical advancements. I think you're seeing better athletes in this tournament. I think you're seeing more intensity in this tournament. it's been a really entertaining tournament. Don't get hung up on the number of games that haven't had a goal in the first half or the number of scoreless draws. I think it's been maybe the best played World Cup up to this point so far, and I'm excited to see where it goes. Now, we mentioned Costa Rica. There was another upset as well. Should you have been surprised by these upsets? Not if you've been listening to this show. We got more foreshadowing coming up in 5 minutes. Atlanta Soccer Tonight will be right back on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
When it comes to the world of soccer, we've got you covered.
Back to more of Atlanta Soccer Tonight on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back. Atlanta Soccer Tonight on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. You can always catch up with the show and find some bonus content. The Off the Woodwork podcast folder on the Odyssey app, but also anywhere you get your podcasts. Let's get caught up on the other games today. We've talked about Costa Rica and Japan. This one kind of set some dubious marks, but also had the shocking result with the Ticos getting the 1-0 win. No shots on target from either side in the first half. The XG was 0.05 in the first half. But one thing that we learned in Japan's game against Germany, and it showed here again, they are much better with three center backs. When they get those wing backs out wider and get them high up the pitch, Japan looks a lot better. They looked much better in the second half here with more opportunities.
Yeah, and it makes you wonder, are they going to make that adjustment for a full 90 minutes at some point? It seems like I get not doing it and not wanting to take those risks and maybe trying to gamble for a tie or maybe try and gamble at trying to keep it really tight and grab a goal. But at the same time in that game, they should have felt more secure in their own ability, I think. And they made a mistake not starting with that more aggressive formation. And I think you end up costing yourself because over the course of 90 minutes, if you play in that way and you get more attack and you get more involvement, I don't know if they can hang on to a clean sheet against you if you're able to be more aggressive moving forwards.
It's the tough situation of going from a game where you had about 25-26% of the ball against Germany. Germany set records that were then broken later by Spain, to a game against Costa Rica where Japan had 57% of the ball. That's a wild swing in just the way a game's going to have a flow to it. And Costa Rica, look, they're just comfortable in these situations. They hadn't had a shot on target in over 184 minutes of play at this tournament, including the stoppage time. They finally get a shot on target, and it goes in. It wasn't the prettiest from Kacer Fuller, but it found the back of the net. A little bit of a floater that seemed to catch the Japanese goalkeeper off. And Costa Rica goes from losing 7-0 to winning 1-0. Welcome to the World Cup.
Hey, a goal is a goal at the end of the day. Doesn't matter how it happens. And sometimes you get a streak of luck, a streak of good fortune in terms of the goalkeeper maybe not being in the best position, maybe not expecting it in the same way. And when you don't have shots on target, sometimes you've just got to take those opportunities because, as the cliche goes, you've got to take a shot to score a goal. And they sort of proved that to you that right there in that game.
They have one shot on target in the tournament. They have one goal in the tournament, and they have 3 points in the tournament, even though they have a -6 goal differential. I can't believe that there's been a team that has given up 7 goals in a game and went on to win their next game. I can't believe that happened before.
With a clean sheet, which I think is the biggest statement in that one, right, too, because having been a defensive-minded player my whole career, it hurts you when you concede goals, one goal, two goals, let alone seven. Luckily, I didn't have to do that too many times in my career, or I think I might have given up playing, because it's a prideful thing. And I think you saw that in the Costa Rican performance too, that they were trying to regain some pride in themselves, in a side that's known for being confident defensively, and a goalkeeper in Navas that's known for being a fantastic goalkeeper. He displayed it with a couple of saves. And as we mentioned, a goalie that wasn't getting many minutes for his club game, it's very difficult to then step in to a pitch and be expected to perform at your best, sharpest level. That's 7-0. If there's one thing it gave him some sharpness, because he was certainly busy.
Yeah, he really wasn't tested a ton here, but he had to make a huge save late with the lead. Big save with his feet. He's just such a well-rounded goalkeeper, and he gets it done. There was a team in previous World Cup history, Paraguay in 1958. They lost 7-3 to France in a game, and then they turned around and beat Scotland 3-2 the next time out. Those are some drunk games in 1958.
A lot of goals. That's a lot of goals.
That's chaos. But Costa Rica has an opportunity to advance after losing 7-0 in game one. We'll talk about the scenarios in Group E here in a minute. Let's bounce over to Group F. I think the most disappointing team in this tournament, and maybe the team that has played the worst in terms of quality, is Belgium. Belgium has been horrible. 12.5% of their completed passes have been in the attacking third. That's less than half of what Brazil did. That's almost less than half of what France and Spain and Portugal have done. They're not getting the ball into the final third. They're the only team with both of their starting lineups average age over 30 years old. They've had 26 touches in the opponent's 18. France have 78. The expected goal total over two games is less than what Canada did against them in the first game, even without the penalty. It's crazy how bad they have been, and they were bad here. They looked old. They looked sluggish. Morocco had a goal that was called back correctly, and then Morocco goes out and just flat out wins the game in the second half, and Morocco was far and away the better team.
Yeah, it wasn't a shock scoreline based on the performance you saw on the pitch, right? If you're someone that didn't wake up to watch the game, you see the 2-0, you're like, oh my goodness, I wonder what happened. Did they get them on the counter? Did they get lucky? Did Belgium dominate and not finish? No, 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 no. It was a one-sided game and not in the way that you expected it. So many household names in this Belgium side. So many underwhelming performances from big players that you thought might have one more chance not to make a run. None of us had them, let's be honest. Kevin De Bruyne, we didn't need you to tell us that you weren't going to win a World Cup. Not many of us had you winning a World Cup. But we thought they maybe would do themselves a little bit of justice in this final hurrah. Kevin De Bruyne, I love the guy. I think he has been one of the best players over the last 10 years. He's been extremely underwhelming in this performance, and Belgium needed him to be the glue. They needed him to be the leader. They needed him to be someone creating opportunities. And he talked about this team being old, and unfortunately, it feels like he's looking a little old, and how sad that he'll never win a major tournament with his national side at this point.
Yeah, that's the sad thing, is this Belgian team with so much talent. And yeah, I agree with De Bruyne. 2018 was their best opportunity where they were in their primes and they weren't able to get it done. That's what happens. The World Cup is hard to win. Only 8 countries have ever won the thing. Not many more than that have even been to a final. Belgium hasn't been to a final. But this group you thought would do more, and I thought they would be more competent, at least in this tournament. They haven't been. I don't want to take anything away from Morocco either, because Morocco is one of two teams in this tournament who have not given up a goal through two games. Poland is the other one. Nobody would have had those two teams in that category coming into this, but Morocco is in a great position to advance. They get Canada on the last day. We're about to talk about Canada here in just a second. But Morocco's in a great position to advance, and they are a very, very balanced team. They're good defensively, even with a goalkeeper change today. A late injury caused the change. But they can also hit you on the counter. They're dangerous on set pieces. And they're just a good technical team that can play with the ball as well.
innovative. I mean, you look at that free kick, the fact that they had the cheek to try and catch Courtois out for a second time, and they had the success in doing so this time. I think that they have a real diverse way of attacking and damaging, and they're comfortable, like you say, with the ball at their feet. They've got some charisma when they're playing. They've got some silky skills. They've got some physicality. And I think the fight and the passion was there as well. Every close-up of these players, they just looked like they wanted it. They looked like they had that fire in their belly and determination to prove that they belong on this stage. And they have been the surprise package for the ages in terms of how complete they have looked in their performances. And I wouldn't want to be Canada right now trying to go out of this World Cup on a little bit of a high, because it just gets tougher and tougher for them.
Oh, Canada. This is a lot to get into. They got their first goal ever in World Cup play. Fifth game, first goal. Alphonso Davies, second minute. Great goal. Tejan Buchanan with the cross. Canada looked really good for the opening 20 minutes. Then Croatia's midfield started to dominate. Had a goal called back in the 26th for offside. It was correct. Luka Modric really starts to get going, and the goals started to flow, and Canada folded. And I think they tried to make some changes going into the second half, some of the wrong changes. It didn't work. They changed things a lot. We're going to talk about John Herdman and all of his things that went into this game, because there's tactical, there's personnel, and there's how he manages himself. But let's start with Croatia. Croatia's midfield, I think, might be the best in the tournament. And you know how I feel about Spain and Busquets and Pedri and Gavi. This Croatian midfield is so, so talented. And they're so complete. I mean, those three guys can all interchange. They can drop. They can defend. They can get forward. They can control the ball. They can create chances. They can do everything. Mateo Kovacic, one of the best players that doesn't get talked about enough in this tournament. He was 30-30 passing in the first half. He five tackles, four chances created, 93% passing for the game. The last guy to do something like that, Lothar Matthäus in 1990. Like, that's a performance for the ages. And he hasn't really been talked about anywhere, because there's Luka Modric, because there's Kramaric. There's so many talented players in this team. Croatia, another veteran team. So Belgium doesn't have an excuse. Another veteran team who is performing at such a high level.
Yeah, and I think that they just have a little bit more spirit in them. They have a little bit more determination in them. And I don't want to blame coaches, but I think they have a coach that's understanding where they're at and bringing the best out of the players, in terms of the manager making the adjustments for the age and seeing changes in how they're playing from 2018, because they're understanding that they need to make adjustments based on the personnel. You can't play a similar World Cup squad 4 years later and expect them to do all the things the same when they're an aging squad. And I think that that's the contrast between Belgium and Croatia, is that the Croatians kind of know where they're at, and they're using their strength at this stage of their careers to dominate that midfield in understanding of each other and communication and chemistry and doing each other's jobs and handing off so well. The communication in that midfield to hand off tasks, to make sure they're covering, it has been brilliant.
Yeah, it has. And they're a well-organized, they understand the system, and they keep their heads in these moments. Just a complete team, absolutely complete team. Let's get into the John Herdman issue, because I think there's a lot to talk about with Herdman. Now, we talked about his comments after the match where they lost to Belgium, and he told the media what he told his team after the game, and he said that he told them that they were going to go out, and he used a word that I'm not going to repeat. He did not use the word on the media, but he told you what it was. He said they were going to do that. They were going to F Croatia. That's the way he said it. And well, they didn't. Andre Kramaric, who had two goals here, his quote after this game, he said, "These are words that have motivated the whole of Croatia. I want to thank the coach of Canada for the motivation. He could have chosen better words. He could have formulated it a bit differently. In the end, Croatia demonstrated who effed whom." Good grammar there, by the way, as well. That was really good. when you can't say that it didn't matter and it's just, well, that's what people say, that's what people do. You can't say it didn't matter when a player says that after the game.
No, the people underestimating the impact it had in terms of spurring on this team after they faced adversity as well. I think that Canada scored that early goal and perhaps Croatia may have laid down and died a little differently if they didn't have that extra motivation underneath them. I think you saw in their body language when they conceded that goal that they wanted to make sure that they didn't become a quote in terms of the flip side, in terms of Canada getting what they thought they were going to get out of this game. And the determination from them was incredible. And it's a foolish, foolish comment to make on the big stage, a naive comment to make from an inexperienced coach, perhaps at this level on the men's side of the game. And you can't get away with it. You just can't get away with those sound clips at this level with the amount of media. You're going to get blown out of the water. And it's disrespectful and it's foolish against a team like Croatia. You didn't give them enough respect in terms of the level that they can play. And I think that you saw Croatia banging and banging down on that door because they wanted to make it a murderous result. Halftime, by the way, had Canada's name written all over it. They were begging for halftime. I think if that first half had kept going, it could have been 3-4 by halftime if there were 5 more minutes, because Canada were depleted and I don't think their coach helped them in that manner.
Yeah, and it didn't really get better in the second half either for Canada, and that, again, does go back to the coaching as well. It didn't get better after the game. Zlatko Dalic, the manager for Croatia, said that John Herdman wasn't there to shake his hand after the game. That's an embarrassment. There's no excuse for that. There's absolutely no excuse for that. Not in a game like this. It comes up sometimes where there's a bunch of friction in the game, mm-hmm. and maybe the coaches have been chirping back and forth. Okay, that's a different conversation. Not a huge fan of it, but that's different. This is a game where you ran your mouth beforehand. You got beat badly, exposed badly. Naive is a perfect word to describe Canada on the field and in these kind of situations. You've got to take that like a professional. You've got to shake that hand afterwards. You've got to say, hey, you guys showed us, we've got a lot to learn, whatever. You don't do what John Herdman did and then have the opposing manager say that, yeah, that guy's got a lot to learn. That's embarrassing. And we get to the big picture with Canada, and John Herdman might not be there in 2026. And what he did in this tournament, Canada was the darling for a minute. They're the second team to go out, and they did not look like they were ready for this level of play. Personnel mistakes. Atiba Hutchinson was in the game for way too long, was completely gassed. He changes everything all the time, and he was a little embarrassing. There's so much to get into. We're gonna carry that over a little bit to our last segment. We're going to look ahead to the net games tomorrow. We're going to get caught up on the news. We're also going to get you ready for your juice box counting as well. Look at the board for tomorrow. Maybe there's a good play there. We'll get you ready for that. We'll be back in 3 minutes with Atlanta Soccer tonight on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
It's soccer. It's soccer. On the world stage.
And Jason Longshore has it all covered with Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back. Last segment, Atlanta Soccer Tonight, getting you ready for the games on Monday, group stage finales. In the final two groups that haven't played their second game yet. Last segment, Jessica Charman, I've got to give you the last word on Canada. We were a little fired up, didn't get to finish our thoughts there. Should John Herdman continue for Canada as they get ready for 2026?
It's hard because he did so well to get them where he was, but you wonder if he's just capped out at that. Was he the team that was able to improve Canada, get them to this world stage, and then just disappoint in the end? And listen, they did well in their first game. I don't think you could underestimate that. They did do well. They made a name for themselves. They weren't able to continue that. And I think the performance from him as a coach in terms of his words, in terms of the lack of sportsmanship at the end as well, Canada's waited a long time to be on this world stage and to embarrass the nation in that way, when you're the manager of the national team, when you're the leader, when kids are watching you. When I coach, if my kids don't shake hands with the opposition, they won't play for me. Like, that's so important to teach that. But I have to lead from example, right? And the fact that he didn't lead by example, admit he was wrong, shake hands, and just, you know, leave it on the field is an embarrassment, and that's going to stand out. And unfortunately, the coach has made himself the headlines. He's made himself the center of the attention, and he's taking away. Alphonso Davies should have been the star of today's show in terms of the media. He scored Canada's first ever goal at 22 years old. He's an incredible story in terms of the history of how he was born in a refugee camp, how he's come to Canada, the progression in the life that he's made, a role model, right? He's not our talking point because your manager has overshadowed you. And to me, that's absolute garbage.
It's a bad look. I'm going to give our friend Nick Alifi a little credit here. I can't take credit for the suggestion, but when you look at what Saudi Arabia has done with the talent they have and Hervé Renard, that might be somebody that Canada could really benefit from in charge with 4 years to prepare, with 3.5 years to prepare for 2026. Just saying. We'll see what the Canadian Federation decides to do. All right, let's bounce around the news of the day. 15 games out of 28 so far played have been scoreless at halftime, but 10 of those have had second half goals. Does that tell you anything about this tournament yet, Jess, or are you still kind of waiting to see a little bit more on the results here before we can say if it's a defensive tournament?
Yeah, I think we need to wait a little longer in terms of, just because this is such a unique tournament with when it's taking place, with how little time teams have had to prepare with each other, to the environment, to being on the World Cup stage. I will say, I think it shows that teams are going out a little tentative. I think they are going out in these games wanting to avoid mistakes, even at the highest level of games, even the teams that should have the most confidence in their ability. I think they're still a little shy in the games to get started, which is why we're seeing those goalless 45s. But the fact we're seeing 10 games getting goals afterwards shows that it tends to open up once they've grown into the game. I don't think we can ever really compare this World Cup, though, because of when it's taken place. It's such a different preparation. Teams are, you know, out of their regular seasons. Players are at a different level of freshness. They haven't had as long to gel. So this will always be an anomaly when you look back at it, because it's such a rare thing that we're talking about the World Cup as we get nearer to December.
Yeah, as we get closer to January, that's silly season with the transfer window open. And there's a couple of transfer-related bits of news, or at least rumor and report. Manchester United, according to ESPN, are open to bringing Christian Pulisic in on loan from Chelsea, where he hasn't played consistently. I would have loved to have seen him make this move last summer so he would have played more consistently coming into the tournament, but I think he's been good in this tournament for the U.S. Mm-hmm. Hasn't really affected him. But yeah, he's going to have to play more going forward, and a move to Manchester United would be very interesting. A move for Lionel Messi to enter Miami would be very, very interesting. A lot of reports out of the Times in London about this, which was a weird place for these reports to originate. But in that reporting, it was that Inter Miami wants Lionel Messi. Duh. We've known that.
I want Messi in Atlanta.
We all want Messi to play for our club. Guillaume Balague and Fabrizio Romano, who are two of the most highly trusted sources when it comes to transfers. According to both of them, Messi's not thinking about next season right now. Everything's about the World Cup. He'll make a decision on next season in the first half of 23. This would be when his contract ends at PSG in the summer of 23, going into the 23-24 season. PSG wants to sign him to a one-year deal with a potential option. Barcelona's name has come up, although they have not been in contact, according to reports. Miami has been. Miami's going to make a big play. There's been talk about Sergio Busquets going to Miami as well. They're obviously going to make a big play. Can they get it done? We'll have to wait and see. I don't think anything is decided as of yet. DC United manager and England legend Wayne Rooney says that Gareth Southgate should rest Harry Kane against Wales and that he should start Phil Foden. What say you?
I mean, I've been begging to rest Harry Kane, honestly. I've been very nervous about him getting any worse of an injury or not being able to perform later on. My concern is, though, he hasn't got himself hot yet, right? Like, he hasn't scored a goal. I almost want to make sure that he gets a goal under his belt before you take him out of a game. You want to make sure he has something going into the knockout stages to feel good about, because right now, his last memory of being on the soccer pitch is that horrific miss, the header against the US, which was uncharacteristic from him. So I think you got to give him minutes maybe personally, and I think he'll want minutes, but I think you can manage those in a different way. In terms of Phil Foden, man, Wayne Rooney had to go there, right? And just add more fuel to the fire on the Phil Foden haters, or lovers, rather.
That's what we do. There's always that guy on the bench that would fix everything magically. They're a wizard. Phil Foden is that wizard for England. I think he's a great player. I think he might be their most talented player. But if he doesn't fit, then he doesn't fit. Or if he fits to play a certain role, okay, use him in that way. Gareth Southgate has done a good enough job for England. Outside of Sir Alf Ramsey, he has done a better job than anybody else who's managed England. So I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt, even if I didn't like the approach on Friday against the U.S. And we'll see what happens. But you got to let him ride. You got to let him work at this point. Coming into this U.S.-Iran game, we knew that politics would become part of the conversation. And this is going to probably unfold more tomorrow, and we'll get deeper into it as we prepare for the match. But the United States soccer accounts, the Federation accounts, posted the Iranian flag without the Islamic Republic symbol in the middle of it. They doctored the image of the flag. That's a big no-no when it comes to these kinds of tournaments and international sports. They did that, and the Federation representative said, clearly the decision we made was to show support for the women in Iran. This is our decision, not anyone else's, or pressure from anyone else. They did take it down later. The players didn't know this had happened. The coaches for the team did not know this had happened. The U.S. government did not know this had happened either. They none of them were consulted about it. There was a media availability today. It led to some really awkward questions for Greg Berhalter, for the players who were involved. I think it was Walker Zimmerman and Tim Ream. The teams have to do a media availability the day before a game. I think we're going to hear more about this from both sides tomorrow, but it's not the same thing as what John Herdman did, but I do not like giving opponents any kind of extra motivation going into a game. This was poorly thought out by the U.S. Soccer Federation. If it's the comms or the digital or the marketing staff, whoever it was, everything was not taken into account here in making that decision to post a doctored version of the Iranian flag.
No. And you can show support for the women of Iran in many, many other better ways that aren't a vague nod to it. You know, come out and talk about it if you want to. Come out and share about it. Share the picture of them not singing the national anthem, something like that. But to doctor an image of a flag, I just think, can you imagine if someone did that to the U.S. flag? And I'm not, but coming at it from a foreigner perspective, I know how much that flag means to America. If someone did something to the flag of the USA, people would be up in arms. And you have given more fighting talk to the opposition because you have disrespected them. And you have, okay, right intentions, if that truly is the reason behind
it. Absolutely.
But it's too subtle. It doesn't come across that way anyway. Just make a statement. You know, I just am just a little disappointed in the way that that's handled. And hopefully it's not some intern that's just made a bad choice on the comms side, because it looks like an inexperienced move.
Yeah, it does. There will be more about that tomorrow. We'll get deeper into U.S.-Iran. We're going to fly through the games coming up tomorrow on the schedule, the last group stage games in Group G and H. But we're going to start with the last game of the day, Portugal and Uruguay. We had a chance to talk to our friend Eric Krakauer about his beloved Portugal. Great interview. It's on the Off the Woodwork podcast folder. But here's Eric on who he feels like is Portugal's most important player.
Well, the most important player on this team for me is Bernardo Silva. I think that he is, for my money, a top 10 player in the world. If we're going to use sort of, you know, a hierarchy, because those hierarchies, let's be honest, are completely silly, right? What is a top 10 player? But in his position, he most certainly is one of the elite players in the world. He dictates tempo. He's impossible to dispossess no matter where he is on the pitch. If you're a Manchester City fan, you sometimes see him occupy a space in between the two center backs and you wonder why that is happening. And I think the reason is that he's just not going to lose the ball and he's trying to play from a deep position. And you've seen him take up that role a little bit more with Portugal. In fact, earlier today in the press conference leading up to the game against Uruguay, he was asked about his lack of influence against Ghana, and his reaction was sort of to smile a little bit and as if to say, you have no idea what you're talking about. My influence was different, right? I wasn't scoring goals or assisting, but in terms of dictating play, He was, for my money, the most important player on the pitch, even though Bruno Fernandes and, of course, the goal scorers took most of the plaudits.
Bruno had two assists in game one, but Eric's right. Bernardo Silva and what he does in that deeper lying role, critical for Portugal. They're pretty big favorites against Uruguay tomorrow. -105, according to FanDuel Sportsbook. Uruguay +320, draw +220. How you feeling on that one?
I don't think Uruguay has shown quite what they can do. And I think that people may underestimate them coming into this one. I think they have a lot of talent, particularly in the offensive play. They have a brilliant midfielder as well. But if they're not able to gel together and find opportunities, they look bad in their opener. So it depends what Uruguay we see step onto the field. Portugal, yeah, I mean, they looked okay. I think Eric put it best. He said, like, there were moments where they were shaky. Their game management was appalling. They have to improve on that side of the game. If they get a lead in this game, they can't be taking the risks that they took against Ghana.
Eric's going to be upset with me, but I really like that +320 for Uruguay. I like the 220 for the draw even better. I think Uruguay is going to be able to exploit some of those defensive weaknesses for Portugal and get a draw out of it. That's what I'm thinking. But could it turn into an Uruguay win? Absolutely. Brazil and Switzerland, that's the 11 a.m. game. No Neymar. Brazil still a huge favorite, -230. Switzerland +650, draw +340. Any concerns about Brazil without Neymar?
No, I think they've got enough depth. I think they're such a deep squad, aren't they, Jason, in terms of, okay, there's no like for like for Neymar, but they can still bring in a player that can have an impact in a different way to him. But then again, I remember when I said Argentina was going to blow Saudi Arabia out of the water. So I'm not going to say anything too controversial because I don't want to get clipped saying that Brazil is going to destroy them. But I think it will be a comfortable performance for Brazil.
Brazil's going to win that. I'm not too worried about it. I'm not high on Switzerland. Best game of the day in terms of the odds is going to be South Korea-Ghana. South Korea +155. They're the favorite. Ghana +195. Draw +200. Ghana's been a team that has found goals consistently in World Cup matches. South Korea has not looked like a very expansive attacking team right now. I feel like they could cancel each other out in the draw on that one. Anything stand out to you on that?
I just love how Ghana played. I love their fight back, and they've got an exciting couple of players if they're able to get the ball up. But we'll see what happens. I think a draw as well.
Cameroon, big underdogs in the early game, +410 against Serbia. Serbia -135, draw +250. I don't know. I feel like that one's closer. I'm curious to see if Serbia starts Dusan Vlahovic alongside Aleksandar Mitrovic, get two of their best players on the field together. Cameroon, there's a lot of talk about Cameroon having issues behind the scenes. That's not new. We'll find out pretty quickly in that game at 5 a.m. Tomorrow night, we're going to be back after Hawks basketball on 92.9 The Game, probably around 10 o'clock. You can also join us live on the Odyssey app. You can always download the show on demand via the Off the Woodwork podcast. Thank you for spending part of your Sunday night / Monday morning with us. Have a good rest of it. Adios, everybody.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
What up, y'all? It's your boy, Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host, Harrison Sanford, on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.